international finance law, past examinations. We want to look at past papers to try and develop a feel for the content of the papers, for the types of questions that are being asked, for the level of detail expected, and to try to develop sort of techniques to respond to particular types of questions on particular types of subjects. So let's look at some of these. This is a 2022 paper. This is the paper from last year. This incorporates 005 and 006, so we'll just focus on the questions which are relevant to SOLM 005. Question 1. A fast-growing financial technology fintech platform wishes to construct a new manufacturing plant in the UK to build silicon chips to support advanced artificial intelligence AI processors. It is considering either raising funds through the banking or capital markets. It also understands that financing may be available on a recourse or non-recourse basis. You're asked to advise on the possible funding options available and the principal advantages and disadvantages of each, as well as the key documentation required in each case. This is very straightforward, and this is a common question which keeps coming up again and again. It's basically bank or bond, credit markets or capital markets. Are we going to go for the banking market? Are we going to go for the capital markets, the securities markets? The overall point simply to highlight every time is this: if you have good credit standing, you can always borrow more at a lower rate, at a lower coupon rate, a lower interest rate on the capital markets than the banking markets, always. Simply because capital markets deal with bonds, notes, commercial paper. These are all technically securities. They are inherently transferable and negotiable, which means that you can get perfect title so long as you acquire them without any prior notice of defect in title. Therefore, there is much more liquidity in the market. Therefore, you can borrow more at a finer rate. The only qualification simply is this: if you have any credit standing problem, or if the client, if it's a complex deal, or if there's any other issue which might limit access to the capital markets, you'll go banking markets. But in practice, generally, you can always borrow more at a finer rate on the capital markets. But what we then need to do is this: we want to build up a larger answer to this question. Now, on this specific fact pattern as presented, this refers to non-recourse basis. Technically, that involves the area of what's called project finance. We do not need to be concerned with that because we deal with that in the separate course on 005. But what we do need to be aware of is this larger issue of, are we going credit market or capital market? All the reference to non-recourse means is this: in a project finance deal, we're going to construct something such as a hotel or a power station or a plant of some form that's going to generate income. And it's that future income projection that's going to repay the loan. The future income source is going to pay all the borrowing, all the construction costs, all the establishment costs, all the legal costs, everything. So effectively, we are going to build a plant, whether it's a hotel or an oil refinery or a rocket or an oil tanker or a plane, for free. That's what this allows. That's what international finance allows. We're basically going to build it for free. $1 billion project for free. Why? Because the income that's produced from the project is going to repay the project. So you don't need to go into this non-recourse point in the middle, but we need to consider this larger issue of banking markets or capital markets. On a question like this, I would want to explain the background to the markets. If this is my first question in an examination, I'm going to read through all the questions. I read through the full paper. I work out which questions I want to do, and I work out which order I want to do them in. I'm always going to, insofar as I can, follow the order of the classes that have been taught in the course, because then I can build in the relevant background information at each stage. So in this case, I'll start with this question, but because I'm going into international finance, because I'm talking about markets and banks and securities and everything else, I will provide a background to that. So I'll explain the background to international finance, key markets, euro loan, dollar markets, interbank markets, very quickly, short, direct. Then I'll also incorporate all my key terms, Then I'll talk about the distinction between the banking and the capital markets, and then I'll go into the specific question in more detail. On this, I have provided on the system a separate set of notes which cover exactly this issue, and this is dealt with in the bond notes, and there's a table on loans and bonds. Essentially, what we can do is this. From Professor Philip Wood's book, he talks about the general differences between the bond market and the loan market in terms of four characteristics: transferability, character of investors, number and anonymity of investors, and issue mechanics. What I do is I take that and I come up with a slight reformulation. I think there's five key differences: issue and sale formality, documentation complexity, transferability, credit control, default and recovery. And then we can expand that further in slide three. All I've done is compare loans and bonds all the way through on each of these key 5 points. So I will build all that into the answer, because this is the basic differences between the two forms of funding. What I'm then going to do is this. If I want to expand it, I can also build in operational differences between loans and bonds. And I've got 16 points on slides 4 and 5. And again, this is developed in the materials provided. And then again, if I want to build in more, I can talk about other aspects of this, the parties, the structures, the documentation. I can deal with all of this. And then on the terms of the bonds, notes of CP, I've also got slides 10 and 11. What I'm trying to do is incorporate as much of this as possible into the answer so that I can build up the quality and content of what I'm dealing with. The key point, again, as always, is that you can borrow more at a finer coupon rate, at a finer cost in the capital markets because of the additional liquidity. Although, if there's any issues with regards to the credit standing of the borrower or the borrower's group, if there's any problems with access, with availability to the markets, or there's any complication in the project and the use and application of the funds, for any of these reasons, you'll have to go back to the bank market, the syndicated loan market, rather than the capital markets. But this is a simple, straightforward, standard question and standard type of issue that we can deal with in a very simple, basic way. Let's move on. Question 2. Explain how banks can use financial documentation to protect their interest in the event of payment or other default on a term loan or syndicated loan agreement. So this is basically talking about the structure of a standard type of syndicated lending agreement. So if I've already explained the background to the markets and all of that more general background information, I don't need to restate it. I would if I hadn't, but if I explained the background stuff in question 1, I'm not going to deal with that in question 2. Question 2, I can focus more specifically on the euro loan market as a sub-market within the euro dollar market. Again, if I haven't dealt with the background to the euro dollar market, I'll deal with that here. It's all to do with how I order the questions and how I build in all the relevant information that I want to incorporate. I will then specifically focus on LMA, so I need to explain the Loan Market Association. I have a short background piece of information on that, maybe, I don't know, half a page, on LMA, background, functions, missions, all of that. All of that's dealt with in the materials provided and on the course slides made available at the very beginning of the course and at the very end of the course. I'm then going to focus on the LMA core standard multi-currency term and revolving facility documentation. I will then want to explain that this contains basically three core sets of provisions: the financials, the obligations, and the defaults. The question is focusing on the defaults, so I'm going to need to explain that, but I'm not going to jump straight into the defaults. I'm going to sort of build up, work towards that, but then I'm going to spend a lot of time on the core default provisions in detail. The key events of default are standard provisions in 2312, non-payment, financial covenants, other obligations, misrepresentation, cross-default, insolvency, insolvency proceedings, creditor process, ownership of the obligors, unlawfulness, repudiation, the MAC clause, material adverse change, and then I've got the remedy in 2313, which is acceleration, although, in my own opinion, we can actually extend that And I think there's essentially five core remedies which are available: suspension or withholding further advance, cancellation of obligation to lend under the facility, acceleration of repayment, rescission of the documentation, and then damages for breach of contract or tort. So I'm going to explain all of this, but around that I'm also going to build in the reference to the other obligations, the CPs and the reps with the cuffs, and then go into the defaults and the remedies. But also, just going back to the original question itself, what I'm also going to do is this. I need to build in a lot of core material just to explain the answer to the question, as well as the background to that. But also I need to ensure that I answer the specific question. So I'm going to reread and just make sure that I've covered everything. So explain how the banks can use financial documentation to protect their interest in the event of payment or other default. Well, again, it also raises this larger issue then of the relationship between the banks, the syndicate banks, and the borrower and the borrower's group. And what we're essentially trying to do is this, and this is a key theme in the whole course. The banks want to be able to protect their lending commitments, their position, through incorporating a series of remedies and protections in the loan documentation to give them as much possible oversight and ability to manage and direct as possible without actually becoming what we call shadow directors, without actually becoming liable for the day-to-day business and operations of the company. They don't want to become shadow directors because then they can incur separate liability. A specific issue aspect of this is what's called environmental liability. If banks lend to a company, the company breaches environmental standards laws. In a number of cases, what's happened is authorities have gone after the banks rather than the companies because the banks have more assets. Banks have to be very careful about this. But what we can simply do is this. We can create a lot of control, mainly through information provision, and then the ability to negotiate through the key clauses in the documents. So again, if I just look over very briefly, I've given you an outline for the LMA. I've got my own one-page summary front and back. What I can simply see immediately is this. We have the CPs, we have the reps, we have the legal warranties, we have the financial warranties. The legal warranties are in 19, the financial warranties are in 20, and then the CUVs, including the financial CUVs in 21, and then the general undertakings, the general CUVs, corporate CUVs in 22, all of which are tied to the events of default. Specifically within those, we can incorporate the financial ratios, and we can see that specifically on the financial CUVs in 21. And on the outline I've given you, I've referred to at least six core ratios. Minimum net worth is a solvency test, MNW. Earnings before tax, depreciation and amortization comes up all the time. That's the EBITDA. Consolidated net debt. Dividend payment restrictions as a liquidity control, cash retention liquidity, and then leverage ratio, total debt to tangible net worth. And what simply happens is this. Through the use of these financial ratios, we can exercise a very substantial amount of control over the activities of the borrowers without actually managing the day-to-day business, which would make us shadow directors and possibly liable for their conduct and any loss that their activities create. So what we get is this, both a combination of the initial CPs and the upfront financial warranties in 20 LMA with the further ongoing covenants, which is the undertaking to comply and ensure that none of these financial ratios are breached in the financial CUVs in 21, we can exercise a very substantial amount of control. Now, if you wanted to take this even further, this also goes back to the actual nature and relationship between the CPs, the CUVs, and the reps and Ws. I deal with this in my loan chapter. I deal with it specifically in the footnotes. And this is to do with the issue of what are the CPs, what is a representation, what is a warranty, and how we can raise legally representations to warranty. So we don't represent, we represent and warrant. We're trying to raise the status of the representation to a warranty, and then the representations and warranties to conditions. Because what we're trying to do, and this is highlighted in the text, is get the right to rescind. We want rescission, because that's the most powerful remedy. Because if the borrowers are threatened with rescission of the documentation, they have to negotiate in very good faith and generally comply with whatever the banks are going to impose. So this gives the banks a substantial degree of control, having the right to rescission and having the stronger negotiating position in any negotiations in the event of payment difficulties arising. So that's only a very short 1.5 line question, but there's actually a lot of issues in there that I could build in to construct a very intelligent, informed, substantial answer. And all I'm then going to try to do is ensure that I can build in as much of this within the word limit imposed. Let's look at another question. Question 3. A major alternative energy manufacturing company specialising in the provision of air and surface and underwater turbine systems wishes to raise $150 million to develop new research and production facilities in the UK. It is looking to sell medium-term notes, MTNs, into the market, although it needs to ensure that these are highly rated to support a non-recourse financing program, advise on the key funding options available, and core documentation involved. So, again, in this case, if we're going to go capital markets, the key issue that arises is it going to be a long fixed bond, 20-year plus fixed interest, or is it going to be a note with floating rate interest, and then we have medium-term notes, 5, 10, 15 plus, or euro notes, 1 to 5 years, or is it going to be commercial paper, anything from 5 days up to 360 days. Then again, to give maximum flexibility, we can also consider using what we call a MOF, a multi-option facility, or a MOFE, multi-option funding facility, which is a combination of these with other items, including, for example, bankers' acceptances, credit lines, swing lines, and other devices. In practice, what we will normally recommend is using a specially designed MOF, because then we can create maximum flexibility with having a number of options available that the borrower can consider using at any particular time as its own needs and circumstances change. So if it's a capital market question, it's really just looking at the different options available within the capital markets, specifically in terms of duration, as well as how we can mix those to provide maximum flexibility for the client. Let's look at question number 5. We don't need to consider securitization and synthetics in 4. Let's look at 5. Tesla cars, which manufactures electric vehicles and hybrid electric vehicles, EVs and HEVs, is looking to restructure its existing extended $250 billion syndicated lending. So it's a lending and a bond program. So it's both banking and capital markets. It wishes to consolidate all of its existing borrowing and reissue this in the form of a single MOF program. It's a MOF. This will include a medium-term note program, shorter duration euro note facility, non-underwritten commercial paper, bankers' acceptance program, and swing, everything we've just mentioned, as well as derivatives or hedging facilities so that we can swap interest rates and currency exposures. It is drafting the program prospectus and is concerned that its financial statements may be overstated. A dispute has arisen with Tesla cars in the US over possible patent and trademark infringements. That's quite clever, Tesla and Tesla. Having stated that it owns all necessary intellectual property rights or licenses and that no litigation is in place or imminent, you're asked to advise on the relevant legal and negotiation issues. So this is standard types of issues which come up in practice. It's basically concerned with party liability. So what we need to do is we need to explain the different heads of liability, common law misrepresentation, statutory misrepresentation and deceit. We could also mention, although it's not relevant here, but you still build it in, agency liability, fiduciary liability, possible regulatory liability. The key issue that arises here is either innocent or negligent. It's not fraudulent misrepresentation, but it could be negligent common law misrepresentation or statutory misrepresentation under the Misrepresentation Act 1967, Section 2(1). So you're then going to want to incorporate as much information around all of this. To take it forward, you could also mention, how do we deal with this? You've got limited duty clauses, limited liability provisions, exclusion, limitations on limiting liability, and then the remedies. Again, we can build in all of this. However, the two key specific points which arise are with regards to the financial and the non-litigation. Now, we just need to check again. This is a capital market deal, so it's ICMA, International Capital Markets Association, and not an LMA, Loan Market Association deal. However, we will still have parallel provisions, parallel language, parallel clauses. So what we could still do is this. We could incorporate reference to the equivalent provisions in a loan deal that would apply in a bond type deal. So partly to deal with this as if we were going to answer it from a loan perspective, if this was a loan question rather than a bond question, but also simply because we can build in the references by cross-reference to demonstrate that we show that we understand this, and because it also simply illustrates the same points which will arise in practice, we can refer to the specific LMA clauses. All we want to ensure is that we don't make the mistake of making it look like this is an LMA deal. It's not, but there will be equivalent clauses and equivalent language. So let's just go through the core LMA clauses because they're relevant to this question. What we simply have is this. In the LMA, standard multi-term and revolving facility document, we have, for example, no misrepresentation, that's a representation and warranty provided for under LMA 1910. We also have accuracy of financial statements in 1911. We have information undertakings, that's the information reps and warranties, in 20(1-5). We may also have these repeating on every drawdown, so a repetition clause, that's 1914. But we also then have the financial covs in 21, which incorporate all the relevant financial ratios. Then we have the default breach of misrepresentation clause, that's a default clause in 23(4). We also have a specific breach of financial covenants as a default in 23(2). And then there's also an argument, but it's not really a strong one, but we could just refer to it to show off our command of the subject more generally. Could this also constitute a material adverse change? Arguably not, but still mention it in 23(12). If it was a MAC, that could then trigger cross default in 23(5), but it could, any default triggers a default elsewhere as well. And then also you then get the remedies acceleration 23(13). So do you see what we're doing? We're demonstrating ability to answer the question, identify issues, and then source relevant material. In this specific case, we're referring to the LMA, although strictly speaking that doesn't apply because it's an ICME deal, but that would still add quality to the answer. If that's all to deal with the financial issue, financial misrepresentation, to focus on the litigation point, we can do something very similar. So the key non-litigation clause in the LMA is 1913. We've also then got the non-misrepresentation clause. Again, we mentioned that before, that's 1910. We have misrepresentation as a default in 23(4). And then also specifically, as defaults, we have the key provisions on insolvency, insolvency proceedings and creditor processes, that's 23(6-8). And then again, if we wanted to, we could mention, although it's not strictly relevant, the MAC 23(12), the cross default 23(5), and the remedies acceleration 23(13). So again, what we're doing is this. We're showing we can identify the issue. We're demonstrating our ability to comprehend and advise our clients on the core legal issues and liability problems that may arise, but also cross-referring to the key legal source documents that may be relevant. In this case, all we're simply going to do is make sure that we correct the financial statements, we ensure that there is no over-exaggeration, there's no misrepresentation. To the extent that we need to disclose the litigation, we will do so. All we have to do is to confirm the content of the specific language clause imposed in this particular case. And again, even though strictly speaking this is an ICMA and not an LMA question, all we could do is build in reference to the particular language in the LMA. And LMA 1913 states that no litigation, arbitration or administrative proceedings of or before any court, arbitral body or agency, which if adversely determined might reasonably be expected to have a material adverse effect, have, to the best of the knowledge and belief, been started or threatened. So it starts very general. It's no litigation, arbitration or administrative proceedings of any form before any court, arbitral body or agency. So that's very widely drafted. And it's started or threatened. So in this case, has it been started or threatened? A dispute has arisen with Deslacars having stated the prospectus. It doesn't say that the litigation has started or threatened. So there's no, we're not in breach of this just now. But we just have to be careful. But also you have to read on. So it has to be, if adversely determined, reasonably expected, best knowledge and belief, and to have a material adverse effect, an MAE. Now what we'll see is this, it sounds like a material adverse change, an MAC. We will define a material adverse effect separately. That's not provided for, it's not included in the standard LMA language. The term's in the definition section, but it's not actually defined because that will be a matter of market practice. That's a negotiation point that the lawyers will build in using their own documentation. And that's something that would be highlighted in negotiation and considered. But what we can do is this, we just need to be aware of the clause. We need to understand the scope of application of the clause, and we need to be able to advise our clients and ensure that we do not breach any of the specific language so that we do not create any liability on behalf of our client. Again, it's quite a simple fact pattern, but it actually raises a number of issues, and depending on how we want to deal with it, we can incorporate all of the information that I've just referred to. Let's look at some more questions. This was International Finance Law 2021. Explain the principal sectors or markets that make up the euro-dollar markets. Very straightforward. So you talk about markets more generally, international financial system, you then focus on the euro-dollar. To do that, you need to also explain the history. But then we go into the three key markets of the interbank market, the euro loan market and the euro dollar market. I deal with all of this, both in the introduction paper and in the separate euro dollar paper. This is very straightforward. And all you'll do then is build up around your 1,500 word allocation. Two, outline the key considerations that apply in determining whether a company should attempt to raise funds in the loan or capital markets. So again, this is simple, bank or bond. It's simple, credit or capital. It's what we did before. So you've got the key characteristics, you've got my five key points, you've got slide number, page three, on slide number three. If you want to build it up, you've then got slides 4 and 5 and 10 and 11. You just build everything up around it. You need to explain the difference between the markets, you need to explain all your key terms. The overall conclusion to draw again simply is that you can borrow more at a cheaper rate on the capital markets than the banking markets, subject to there being full availability, no disruption, no additional credit problems, and any other qualification, for example, complexity of the project, whereby the banks, the investors may be nervous, in which case you'd have to go to the banking markets. Standard question, standard answer. Three, explain the functions and content of the principal representations and warranties contained in a typical syndicated lending agreement. Again, we're into the LME, we're into standard documentation, we're into the obligations. So I need to explain in a standard doc We're going to have financials, obligations and defaults, obligations. We're going to have the CPs, the reps and Ws and the Cubs. And then this time I'm going to focus on the reps and Ws. We deal with all of this in the chapter provided. Again, what is a representation? A statement of fact rather than law. But there's also other qualifications that statements of law could become. Points of fact, and then mixed statements. So there's case law on this. I deal with that in the footnote in the chapter. The key point we're also trying to do is this. We're trying to elevate the reps to the W's. So it's reps and, so you represent and warrant. So we elevate one to the other, as well as we're trying to give them the status of conditions, so that if we breach the documentation, we get rescission and not just damages. So again, we can build all of this in. So what we're trying to do is this. It's a short question, 1.5 lines, but we're trying to build up a larger 5-page answer around all of these points. Question number 4. Explain the role and function of an agent bank under a loan agreement and in a bond transaction. So we need to explain, again, depending upon what we've dealt with already in previous questions, the loan market, the bond market, a typical loan deal, a typical bond deal. We can list all the parties, we can list all the documents, and then we go into specifically the agent bank role and function. Principally, what we're going to do is distinguish the agent bank from the lead or arranging bank. And then we can actually, if we wished, we could focus in particular on the key relevant clauses from the LMA. So we know, for example, that the key direction obligation provisions are in 26. So we're appointing the agent under 26.1, duties of the agent are in 26.2, but the role of the arranger and agent are in, well, and so that's the role of the agent and arranger not being fiduciary is in 23.4, with 26.4, with 26.3, providing that the arranger does not have any other duties under the deal. These are essentially what we call no duty or basis clauses, whereby we limit the scope of duty of the party so that we cannot breach any other obligations and be held liable, simply because if we're not liable to carry out the function, we cannot be liable for breach of the function. And then also you've got other key provisions in 26, as well as specifically the exclusion of liability clause in 26.9. So the difference between the role and function under the loan agreement and the bond is actually very slight. The only key difference in law, I think, that we would want to refer to is the fact that under the loan agreement, the agent bank is agent of the syndicate, whereas in the bond deal, the agent bank is effectively acting as agent of the issuer. You will then also, if it's a large deal, have a separate trustee who's going to act on behalf of the bondholders. The agent essentially is providing the funds for the bondholders. We could argue that it is actually the agent of the bondholders in the bond deal, whereas it's the agent of the banks in the loan deal. That's probably the simplest distinction. But to get to all of that, everything else, we can explain all of the other background to all of this, but the core functions are actually the same. It's to administer the facility once the funds are actually made available, either under the loan deal or the bond deal. 5. Explain the difference between transferability and negotiability in international finance, and giving possible examples of in the loan and bond areas. This is simply this issue again of liquidity and transferability with negotiability in the bond deal. Because we're dealing in securities, these become negotiable instruments. I deal with this in the chapter. You've got the case law on this. It's all dealt with in detail in the bond chapter. There was various cases looking at whether Prussian script and international bonds, Russian bonds, would be recognised in London as negotiable. While, for example, I think it's Steen versus Blake, while Prussian bonds were recognised as negotiable in Prussia, they weren't recognised as negotiable in London. the case law confirms that it's the markets that determine the status of negotiability, not the courts. The courts only recognise what the markets have already determined. So this is basically having regard to, in the London markets, to what extent each of these specific instruments would be treated as a negotiable instrument. The key advantage, as we've said already, is that if something's negotiable, you acquire perfect title without any, so long as you acquire, obtain the asset without any previous notice of defect in title. For that reason, in practice, what will happen is that bonds and other negotiable instruments are deposited with a custodian, simply because if anybody steals them and then tries to pass them on, they can provide perfect title because of this idea of negotiability. It's not very realistic in practice that somebody would steal 100 million euro bonds and try to pass them on in the street to another party, but legally we have to be aware of the issues that arise. But what that then also takes us into is ideas of custody, and then we can talk about Euroclear and Clearstream, and we can build up the answer in that way as well. It also raises the issue of transferability, so we could also refer, if we wish to transferring loans. Loans were historically inherently non-transferable, but over a period of time we developed these ideas of legal assignment, equitable assignment. We then consolidate that under the Law of Property Act 1925, section 136. We also have participation, sub-participation, risk participation, as well as possible securitization and trust. We could refer to all of this as well. 6, comment on the continuing use and relevance of a material adverse change, a MAC clause, in financial documentation following such events as the recent coronavirus crisis. I have provided on the system some additional materials on MACs. I've given you some drafting, at least 2 different forms of the MAC clauses used in practice. And this is also dealt with in the chapter. The key point with MACs is that we want them to be general, but we don't want them to be too general. If they're too general, they catch everything, which triggers default and then cross default. But if they're too narrow, they don't catch anything at all. They're difficult clauses to draft, and this is one of the points that you spend a lot of time on negotiation. One of the other key points that came up with was the coronavirus crisis. A MAC, again, it all depended upon the drafting of the specific clauses, but I've provided material on this in the system. Again, by way of a larger answer, to go into the MAC, you then need to explain that it's one of the covs, one of the corporate covs, so then you need to talk about other covs and obligations, the CPs, the reps and Ws, and then you need to talk about the larger documentation with the financials, the obligations and the defaults. If I've already dealt with in previous questions, the LMA and loan markets and all of this, I don't need to deal with that again, but I would certainly want that all to be clear in the previous questions or at the beginning of this question. Again, what we're trying to do is we're answering the specific question, but we're also trying to build in as much other relevant information as we can around that. Let's look at another one. Let's see what else we've got. So this again, this is 2021 again. So a major UK pharmaceutical company wishes to build a new manufacturing plant to produce coronavirus vaccines in the UK for export to Europe. It is aware that it may either raise funds in the banking or capital markets and on a recourse or non-recourse basis. Right, this is very similar to the question we did before, almost identical. We can forget the non-recourse, it's just, is it bank or bond, credit or capital, are we going to go banking markets or credit markets, capital markets. It's the same answer that we had before. Very straightforward. We've got the, you need to define them, a little bit short background, have all the key terms explained, structure and content of each of the markets, then you're comparing them. You've got the 4 specific factors, if you want, characteristics from Philip Wood, and then you've got my more developed 5 key points, then you've got slide 3, you can expand that in slides 4 and 5 and in 10 and 11. Key point again, always, you can borrow more on the capital market so long as you have availability and there is no issues, disruption or additional complexity of any form. 2, explain the principal obligations imposed under a typical international finance loan agreement and remedy. So again, straightforward. So it's the obligation. So it's the CP reps and Cubs, reps and Ws and the Cubs, as well as it says remedy. So you have to do the defaults as well. But again, it doesn't really matter which one of these I have to talk about. I have to talk about all of it. So I'll also explain you have the financials, the obligations and the defaults, and then go into each of these in detail. If I haven't already explained the LMA, I'll explain the LMA as well, and then the use of standard documentation in markets. If I'm not going to do a separate question on documentation later, and the use and value of trade associations, I could slip that in at the end of the question as well. Three, a young software company in Silicon Valley called Apple, Dapple, wishes to raise money in the London Eurodollar markets. It has developed a new online conference facility called Teamsa. And wants to raise a further 100 million to construct a new server farm facility in the UK and for product development and business expansion purposes, in particular in Europe and Asia. It has been advised that it will either have to prepare an information memorandum for loan market use or a bond prospectus in the capital markets. It has been forced into discussions with Microsoft with regards to possible trademark, and this is very similar to the question we had before. So there's a possible dispute and is concerned with financial projections. Very similar to what we had before. Now let's just check again. It wishes to raise funds. It wants to raise a further for product development in particular. Right, so this could either be information or, it could either be information memorandum or prospectus. So it's either or. So in this case, we definitely need to have all the LMA clauses I mentioned before. You've got the litigation clauses. And I went through all of this. 1913 is no litigation. 1910 is misrepresentation, no misrepresentation. 23.4 is misrepresentation, is a breach. You've also then got a breach if there are specific insolvency or other creditor processes. That's 23.6-8. You could also, just to show off, build in max and cross defaults, 23.12, 23.5. And then the remedies are in 23.13. On the financials, we go to no misrepresentation, 1910, financial statements, 1911. You've got the information reps and W's in 21-5. You've got repetition, 1914. You've got the financial covenants in 21. No misrepresentations, 23-4. Breach of the financial covenants is 23-2. You could refer, if you wanted to, the max and the cross defaults, 23-12, 23-5. And then again, remedies, acceleration, 23-13. So just building it all in, building up the quality of your answers, what we're essentially going to do is it will come down to the specific terms of the disclosure that we need to make. We need to ensure that all our financials are accurate, otherwise it will be misrepresentation. If we know they're inaccurate, that's arguably fraudulent misrepresentation, and you've got case law you can build in and refer to that. It's in both the chapter and in the bond slides. So we need to watch that. Whether we need to disclose the litigation would be a commercial point to be taken by the client, so long as you provide all the relevant information. Again, it looks like because the litigation hasn't been threatened or started, we wouldn't breach any of these clauses, but we would just need to be careful. In practice, you would probably advise your client to disclose, because otherwise it will become an issue later if the litigation has commenced, and then it just becomes an issue as to the date of timing of the signing of the documents. If, for example, litigation is actually threatened on the morning of the signing, you could be in significant trouble, although you've basically potentially legally avoided liability if you can sign that before the litigation is threatened or commenced in the afternoon. It's still, from a commercial practice, wouldn't develop good relations between the parties, so you would probably always recommend disclose. However, the actual legal technical liability would be dependent on the actual drafting of the clause and the date of execution of the documents concerned. The other questions are to do with 006. Let's do another one. Is this the same one? This is 2020. Outline the principal markets that make up the financial system. Very straightforward, very easy, very basic. Question 2. A major Japanese industrial conglomerate is considering raising funds in London. explain the relevant advantages and disadvantages of borrowing euro loan or euro bond. So again, it's a banker bond, credit or capital, advantage and disadvantage. Explain the difference between conditions precedent, reps and W's. Again, it's very similar. We need to go into the obligations. We're going to look at the financials, the OBS and the defaults, focus specifically on the CPs, the reps and the CUVs. Again, where you have the opportunity to build in case law, build in the case law. There's not a lot of case law in this area because a lot of this doesn't get to court in terms of interpretation or confirmation of the legal effects of a lot of these clauses. When it is relevant, use it. It's in my footnotes in the chapter. You can build this in. But again, what you're trying to do is you're trying to construct a larger answer around this. So again, look at the questions, decide which order you're going to do them in, and build in as much relevant information at every stage at the beginning of each of the answers, so you pump up your 1,500 words per question. Question 4. A large US computer manufacturing company intends to construct a new assembly plant in Ireland. Company will enter into a syndicated loan agreement for land purchase, with the fitting out of the plant being funded through medium-term notes. Company has been threatened by litigation with regard to the software use of its new tablets, while concerns arise with regard to the accuracy of its... So it's the same thing. It's litigation and financial statements. Advise the company on the extent to which this may be relevant in finalising the terms of the information memorandum and prospectus. So let's just go back again. The company will end. Oh, it's both a loan agreement. Oh, it's a loan agreement for the purchase and a note for the fitting out. So again, it's pure LME. So we've got LME as well as non-LME equivalent capital market clauses, capital market provisions. So because it's LME, you can refer to all the clauses we talked about before. 1910, 1911, 21-5, 1914, 21, 23-4, 23-2, 23-12, 23-5, 23-13, all on the financials. On the litigation, 1913, 1910, 23-4, 23-6 to 8, 23-12, 23-5, 23-13. Very basic, core legal work in this area. What are we trying to do? Manage loss, manage liability, and specifically to prevent our own clients' liability, loss and default. Let's move on. Question 5. Discuss the extent to which loan commitments may or may not be transferable in secondary markets. So again, loan transfers. Background to this: legal equitable assignment, Law of Property Act 1925, Section 136. Then novations, participations, sub-participations, risk participations, and then other equivalent economic interest transfers, trusts and securitization. We can refer to all of this. Because it also mentions the secondary markets, you could also think, well, is that LME? Well, LME actually gets involved with this. LME is trying to promote involvement in these areas. It's trying to build an active secondary markets in loan documentation. So you could then, you're almost invited there, because it says that, to go back to the LME, LME's function, mission statement, and its involvement both in the primary loan market and in the secondary loan market. And then when you raise primary and secondary, you could also then contrast that with primary and secondary issuance in the capital markets. The primary markets when you bring it to the market for the first time, secondary markets where you buy and sell. Question 6. Outline the principal remedies available in the event of default. So again, straight into the default clauses. We're going to explain the larger agreement, where they fit in. Focus on the defaults themselves. In particular, we've got the key defaults with the cross default and the max, so we're going to spend a bit more time on them. Then you've got your remedy clauses. We're going to deal with all of this, but at the same time, build it into a larger answer, into a larger structured treatment of all of the relevant law and practice that applies with regards to this. So what's this one? International Finance Law Applied. Did we do this one? Explain the role of each of the key parties to a typical syndicated lending or bond funding arrangement. So this is a good question. So again, it's loan and bond. we need to look at this. I've given you tables and all of this. I've given you diagrams and summaries for all of this. You explain the loan deal. You explain the bond deal. You explain the parties. It doesn't ask for the documentation, but you could build that in as well. And you're just going to expand this up. Because this is our first question, I would also, personally, I would build in some my definitions, my historical development of markets, an explanation as to the markets and the structure of the markets. Specifically, I'll focus on the Eurodollar markets, because it says typical syndicated lending or bond funding. So we're invited to deal with euro dollar. So I'll build background into that, unless I'm going to incorporate that into any of the other questions, which I'll read through first. I'll have a nice background statement to all of this in my opening question. Question two, outline the principal options available to transfer a loan. This is a transfer question, very straightforward. Question three, explain the continuing relevance and value of the negative pledge. So we're focusing on the corporate covs, negative pledge itself. I deal with this in detail in my loan chapter, but you've also been given additional material on the negative pledge. It's all covered in the chapter. So you've got the points about purpose and protection, purpose, preservation, scope of definition, all the types of security clauses, so you need to look at the definitions of the securities created, all the different types of securities that may be available, coverage, the exceptions you need to refer to, and breach. And also, you've got this issue of automatic collateral clauses, where you have breach of the negative pledge in some documentation. They try to create an automatic security clause to try and create equivalent protections, which then also raises the issue of pari passu clauses. So you can then go into that with the sharing among finance parties in LME 28. There's a lot of material you can build in here. All you need to do is have this ready in advance. It's all structured preparation, structured revision. Have everything ready so that you can use it in the examination. But again, don't just focus on a narrow project finance, narrow negative pledge question. Build it up into a larger answer to fill up your word space. The rest of this is on project finance securitization and official regulation. Let's just look at question six. This could come up in your paper. Your paper could ask any question about the trade associations and any of the associations. You need to know about LME, ICME, ISDA. We did that earlier in the course, and then we went over it again in the revision section. The key point simply is this. Each of these carries out an important set of roles and functions in each of the key markets for which it is responsible, whether it's the loan market or the bond market or the capital markets. Again, more generally, what they're essentially doing is this. They are creating a form of market self-regulation through private documentation rather than public regulation. We create a form of proxy or surrogate market control without the need for separate official regulation. Why? Simply because these markets are so large. They're so large and they're so powerful. So it raises all of these issues. We need to get back to the importance of standard documentation, the role and function of each of the trade associations. And then this is dealt with in the slides that I gave on class one. And we've been over in the last class, which look at this issue of the difficulties in being able to agree a treaty or international convention solution because of the just impossibility of countries to surrender sovereign control over their financial markets, inability to create any form of larger global control model because there's no authority big enough to regulate the markets within which all of the countries and the largest companies in the world and countries in the world all lend and borrow. Therefore, it has to be dealt with on a self-regulatory basis. How do we do that? The main institutions in each market come together. They form a trade association, the LME, ICME, ISDA, by way of example, and then there are others. I think I provided on the system a list of other trade associations. I'll put that back on the system. I'm sure it's under, at the very beginning, it should be class one, but I'll check that it's there. There are others to refer to, and if you want extra credit, extra marks, you refer to more. You can build them in. And then what we've got is the fact that because these markets have to be self-regulated, what we're going to do is we're going to use private law, so we have standard documentation. Standard documentation presets the rights and obligations of all of the parties, so everybody has clarity and certainty as with regard to the expectations of their rights, duties and obligations. We will have some negotiation in all particular transactions, but the general nature and structure of all of this is very clear up front. Now, I just wanted to make some other points. I did this in the revision. I mentioned it briefly at the beginning, but let me just go over it since it arises here. So, the key point is this. On the first set of slides, I think it was slides, was it 10 and 11? I deal with this issue of the impossibility of agreeing treaty solutions. And then the next slide is the value of self-regulatory market control, internal market-based models. I then said, well, what were the specific characteristics that allowed these international finance markets to be able to rely on this self-regulatory model when it was generally not applicable in many other market areas? And I identified 12 key factors. So let me just go over those again. I did list all of these before. Let me just go back over them now. What we have is this. So point one, we have the limited number of participants in this market. Limited participations, a limited number of counterparties in this market. Secondly, all of these counterparties are of a professional, official or expert nature. So professional, official and expert nature of market participants and counterparties. Thirdly, all of them, almost all of them, if not all of them, will be separately legally advised. So professional legal advice and support. Fourthly, we have trade association involvement. The major banks, the major players come together and form their own trade association, which is monitoring and managing these markets over time. Fifthly, we have the pre-prepared standard documentation that we've mentioned already. So the trade associations prepare standard docs, or in the ICMA case, standard sets of rules and practice to govern the operation of these markets and the content of the documentation, which consequently affects the rights and duties of all of the parties concerned. Now, points 6, 7 and 8 are then to do with legal enforcement. So we have standard governing law clauses which will tie the documentation and the transactions back to very well respected, established legal jurisdictions, principally either English law or New York law. Principally. But the objective of this is that you have, again, legal certainty, because these are the legal systems that are most highly respected. So that's both, this is point six for the governing law, as well as the jurisdiction in point seven. So again, for point seven, in terms of jurisdiction, we're going to rely on the most professional commercial courts in the world to resolve disputes in this area. All of this, again, adds certainty, confidence to these markets. And then eight is just the peripheral point. When we get orders from these jurisdictions, we can enforce it. When these orders are issued in New York and London, we can easily enforce them, and then these are recognised all around the world, so we can actually ensure that we have protection of the legal rights, including the judicial orders which are issued in these areas. The last four points then develop this idea of size and importance. So point number nine is the very large size of these markets. These are the largest markets in the world. The international euro dollar market, the euro bond market, the foreign currency market, the insurance markets, the shipping markets, the aircraft markets. 10 is the importance of these markets. Society, business, governments, the world could not operate without these markets. And then consequently, point 11 is the fact that these markets are then subject to continuing oversight by the central banks and by governments and by the financial media. They're not subject to direct regulatory control, but they're still subject to oversight simply because of the size and importance of these markets. So they're constantly under examination and review by the central banks, by the financial media, by the financial press, and about the markets more generally, simply because they will price share prices and bond prices, and the ability for a company or country to borrow in the market will be dependent by its rating. So we have oversight, even though we don't have direct regulation. And then point number 12, even though there is no formal lender of last resort in these markets, we still have an implied form of market support, with the effect that if anything does go wrong in any of these major markets and there is major significant disruption, the central banks can always step in. And we saw that specifically at the end of September 2022, after the Conservative government in the UK had issued a mini budget that hadn't been pre-approved by the Office for Budget Responsibility. It made the markets very nervous, and this caused a sharp increase in borrowing price and costs for the UK government, which materially destabilised the markets. The Bank of England didn't consider it had to step into the markets more generally, but it did have to provide support in specific areas of the market, including with regards to the operation of pension funds and insurance companies who were being forced to dispose of assets, creating a forced asset sale. So what we effectively got was a form of qualified, implied, residual, contingent, emergency lender of last resort in these markets. And if you wanted to get a really high mark in this type of question, you could build all of these points in. So let's look at, can we find any more? Let's see what else we've got. What's this one? This is International Finance Laws 2019. Question one, explain the principal contractual obligations imposed under an international syndicated loan agreement. So these are the obligations. It's the CPs, the reps and Ws and the Cubs. But to explain that, I need to explain the financials and the defaults. I need to tie that into the standard documentation. I need to tie that into the euro loan markets. I need to explain that in terms of the euro dollar markets, in terms of the larger international financial system. This is a very good opening question. I can build in a lot of other larger introductory material and then go on to focus on this more specifically. Question two, explain the role and function of each of the key parties and documents in a typical euro bond. So this is quite simple. Question one focuses on the euro loan market, question two on the euro bond. Again, I need to explain the parties, I need to explain the structure, operation of the deals. I've given you all of that in the outlines and the tables, the coloured tables that I've provided. You've both got the bond deal and the timeline and the different structural options for actually operating either a bond, a note or a CP programme. You can deal with all of these issues. Again, if I haven't dealt with the euro bond market before, I'll deal with that in two at the beginning. There's three main markets, the interbank market, the euro loan market and the euro bond market, as well as all of the other more peripheral markets as well. Very straightforward. Question three, explain the principal triggers for and effects of a default. So again, this is a default clause, so I'm getting to the LMA. I've got my default clauses in 23. I've got 23.1 to 12 I need to explain. Then my remedies in 23.13. I've also got the two specific defaults with the MAC clause, 23.12, and my cross default in 23.5. Very easy to build up a large, substantial answer around that. Question four, a major US hotel group wishes to construct a new hotel in London. The company can borrow through the Euro syndicated loan or bond markets. The chief financial officer is concerned with UK withdrawal and Brexit, specifically with a major fire on the European continent. Brexit may also damage projected financial forecast. Comment on the extent to which these issues may impact. So again, it's a financial issue and it's a possible litigation, or in this case, that's quite interesting, it might be an administrative issue. There might be administrative charges because of the fire as well, sort of more to do with public authorities, breach of fire regulations, this type of stuff. That's quite interesting. But again, because it's an information memorandum, it's going to possibly borrow in loan or bond markets. So again, we just build in all the standard LMA clauses on the financials, possible breach and then on the litigation. So again, exactly as we had before, 1910, 1911, 21 to 5, 1914, 21, 23, 4, 23, 2, 23, 12, 23, 5, and 2013. And then on the litigation, 1913, 1910, 23, 4, 23, 6 to 8, 23, 12, 23, 5, 23, 13. Very standard. 5, explain the different options available. So it's a transfer issue. So we're back to transfers, we can discuss all of that. Again, on transfer, if we wanted to build up the answer, we could also build in what's the difference between transfer and negotiability, so we could talk about that as well. And then, if we still needed more space, talking about negotiability takes us into liquidity, so then we can talk about the advantages of transferability in creating additional liquidity in markets, which can benefit the ability of borrowers to obtain more funds at lower cost. Have we got another one? Let's do one more. So this is 2018. Question one. The negative pledge clause in a term loan agreement relies on flawed legal... So this goes into the negative pledge. This was when I wasn't actually teaching this. I think this was prepared by Professor Graham Roberts, who taught that specific class. He was just focusing on one aspect of the background to this. It's to do with the equality and the ability of the syndicate members to ensure that they have the same rights inter se, as well as if new borrowers are coming in and they're being given preferential treatment. So it's not just the negative pledge, it also raises the whole issue of the relationship between the syndicate. So you then have my 5 syndication principles, which I deal with in my tables, my summaries and my chapter, as well as you've got the pari passu clause in 28. So if you really wanted to show off on your LMA, you would bring in the relationship between the syndicate members. That's all in 22 A, B and C. LMA 2 stop 2 ABC. Obligations are several. Rights are separate and independent. And then C, we have separate enforcement. So that establishes the relationship between the syndicate. You've got the sharing in 28 and the need to repay any preferential payments that are made to the agent, which is shared, apart from the exception in 28.5. The exception is that if one of the banks is going to take action, if it notifies the other banks, invites the other banks to participate, but they decline to participate, if it raises funds, it can keep those funds. You can then look at how that then ties in with the negative pledge. The purpose of the negative pledge is to prevent higher quality security being created afterwards. And then you've got all the material on the negative pledge in my chapter. Question 2. A major British engineering company wishes to fund a number of potentially new lucrative projects. Explain the relative advantages and disadvantages of banker capital. So it's banker bond, creditor capital, all the same material we discussed before. English law permits the arranger, lead bank liability in a syndicated to be reduced to zero. That's interesting. That's basically heads of liability, and then the specific protections for the arranging bank. That's in section 26.3 that we talked about before. What is the role of the arranger bank under the LMA? The LMA specifically says that it does not have any obligations whatsoever. So that's basically 26.4, discussing that. But also it's the wider heads of liability, even though there's no duty there. Possibly there's still ancillary liability, and then we go through all of the heads of liability, misrepresentation, common law, statutory misrepresentation and deceit, and then the other heads of liability. Question 4. A US electronic company with a major plant in the UK wishes to extend its UK and European facilities. The company may either borrow through the Euro syndicated loan or bond markets. The company has nevertheless been threatened with litigation, intellectual property dispute, concerns with valuation, so it's financials, all the same stuff. So you go through your financial clauses, you go through your litigation clauses, your misrepresentation clauses, Let's just check again. So it's borrowing in loan or bond. So again, you build in all the LMA and you just make the point the same issues, equivalent issues arise in the bond market, even though the specific LMA clauses wouldn't apply. Question five, a large European infrastructure construction company tends to raise funding in the capital markets. It asks for your advice on the various options, including specifically interest rate and duration alternatives. So this is just interest rate and duration. So interest rate, is it fixed as a bond, floating as a note, duration, long bond, medium term note, shorter euro notes, up to 1 year commercial paper, or maximum flexibility, I'm off. Well, that seems to be all of that. What we're seeing is this, a number of key ideas tend to repeat, they tend to come up. Do not be confused, because similar ideas are coming up, you need to be able to deal with them well. Just because they're coming up and you can see some ideas which will repeat, you have to be able to deal with them well. If you want a good mark, you have to be able to construct wider, larger and more detailed answers around this. Everybody can easily get, everybody will pass. It's also quite easy to get a low 60. But the question is, can you then raise the quality of your answer to get a much higher mark? That's why we've gone through all of these questions. That's why we've discussed a lot of the other key and peripheral issues around them. That's why we have specifically tried to identify all the key legal points and then key contractual and other references back into the materials provided. And also at the same time, tried to build all of this up into larger answers so that we can see all of the peripheral issues around each of the questions and build them in to the specific answer so that we make the most effective use of our time and word limit so that we can get the highest possible mark in this course and then raise our overall mark grade for the degree as a